afternoon, everyone. My name is Molly Marin. I am the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. We're going to get started in just a minute here. If you're new to our webinars, we do always post a copy of our PowerPoint presentations, and I'll post the handouts as well on our webpage, nysrti.org. So you can go out and grab those at any time during the webinar if you'd like. At the end of today's presentation, I will post a link to an evaluation. You'll also get that via email. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we very much appreciate the feedback. During today's webinar, feel free to use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have throughout. Dr. Shapiro will likely answer them all at the end, but feel free to use that at any time. Today is the first webinar in our Database Decision-Making in an RTI Process series. We're very excited for today's topic, as well as the next two Mondays. We'll be meeting again on Database Decision-Making and then also on January 12th. We also have our Understanding RTI in Mathematics series going on, and information and registration information on all of our webinars is available on our webpage, and we'll hope that you can join us for the upcoming webinars. Today we are very pleased to have with us Dr. Edward Shapiro. Dr. Shapiro currently is Professor of School Psychology and Director for the Center for Promoting Research to Practice in the College of Education at Lehigh University, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. He is the 2006 winner of the Senior Scientist Award given by the Division of School Psychology of the American Psychological Association in recognition of senior member of the field who has provided a sustained program of outstanding theoretical research. He is author, co-author, or co-editor of 16 books, including his most recently published text with Joseph Kowalski and Amanda Vanderhayden, The RTI Approach to Evaluating Learning Disabilities. Dr. Shapiro is best known for his work in curriculum-based assessment and methods for assessing and intervening in academic skills problems with elementary-age students. Among his many projects, Dr. Shapiro recently received his second U.S. Department of Education training grant to train school psychologists as facilitators of RTI processes. Over the past decade, Dr. Shapiro has been working as a consultant with the Pennsylvania Department of Education to facilitate the implementation of the response to intervention methodology for the state. We are very pleased to have Dr. Shapiro with us today. Welcome, Dr. Shapiro.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Molly, and welcome to everyone who's attending the webinar. It's good to be with you here today, and I'm really looking forward to talking with you today about database decision-making, and in particular, we're going to start by talking about the data team meeting protocol. And this will be followed by two other webinars that actually are all linked together around the same topic of the database decision-making process and the data team process that we used to get there. Again, I look forward to conversations with folks, and feel free to enter questions as they come up. My intent is to present and then to answer as many questions as I possibly can at the end of the webinar, and to make sure that people feel like they've had a chance to ask questions specific to their situation as well as more general situational questions. Of course, it's always impossible to answer everyone's questions on these webinars, but I'll try to do my best to make sure that I get folks' questions answered as best as I possibly can. Let me start by just laying out what I plan to cover today. And today we're really going to talk about the basics of data team meetings and what that's about and how one sets up those data team meetings. And in particular, we're going to look at the general framework that one uses in these meetings. And the reason why this really is important is because one of the key elements of making the RTI process successful is that the data team meetings, the team meeting processes that we use, are really the mechanisms by which we communicate with each other about the way in which our students are performing and the ways in which we're intervening in that performance. Making sure that those meetings have a structure, a framework, an idea of where they're going, a script, if you will, of how they're supposed to occur, really facilitates this process. Because as we all know, in our schools, getting any of these team processes to work also is a matter of being efficient. If you end up being not very efficient in these meetings, you end up not accomplishing the objectives in the amount of time you have. And the one thing we don't have any time to waste with in schools is time. Time is a precious commodity, and it's a commodity that will take lots and lots and lots of effort to make sure that we stay structured on the time frame that we give ourselves to accomplish these objectives. What I'm going to be doing then today is really laying out the basics of this team meeting process, looking at both what the core team does and what I mean by a core team, and what a grade level team does and what I mean by a grade level team. Now, keep in mind that one of the wonderful things about RTI is that the RTI process, the RTI methodology, is a process. It's an entire process of delivering services. And we customize it to the context in which our schools exist. I think you're going to be finding that in some schools, you may not have both a core team and a grade level team. You have one team. Or in some schools, you have a grade level team that functions in both roles as a core team and a grade level team. Some schools could have three levels of teams, although I haven't come across that too often, but you could have additional team levels. What I'm presenting to you is the basics of what a team process looks like at a basic level. Certainly there's customization that will take place within one's particular model. What's really critical in this process is the concept of following a script, and I'm going to actually provide you with an example of a script that you can use. And what we mean by a script is we really mean a very structured way that we organize our meetings, we organize what we say in our meetings, and we organize how we record our meetings. That script becomes very critical in getting the meetings to really work well. And finally, I'm going to talk about briefly today what are some of these key decisions that we make at the broad level of a core team meeting and a grade level team meeting. I'll be going into much more detail of some of these aspects of the decision process in the subsequent 2 weeks, but for today, we're going to try to get at the basics of the team meeting process. There's a saying that we use around RTI, and it's a saying that I like to use over and over again, and it has to do with the fact that when we're talking about the data team meetings, what we really are saying is that without a question, it's all about the data. And without data, it's only an opinion. If we don't have data, it's really not what we mean by what's happening. The data is what drives our decisions. And what we really want our teachers to get the concept of is to be comfortable with data and to be comfortable with the data that they bring as experts in the teaching process. So everything we talk about in our team meeting processes are about bringing data to the table. In order to start this, I'm going to start with a video. And the video is a overview. It runs about maybe 12 or 13 minutes, but it's a very, very good overview for this whole process. And what I'm going to do is play the video for you. I want to make sure everybody hopefully can see it and hear it. I'm going to keep it. I'm not going to expand it to my full screen because I think it gets blurry. But the video is available on YouTube, and you'll actually see where the link is. I think you'll find the video to be a great way to start out thinking about the entire process of a database decision-making team. That's hopefully I'm doing this right. And I'm going to be able to play the video. No. Molly, I need a little help here. I can't see the, there we go, that was it. Let me go back to the video, let me go back to this again and try the, I need to get the link going, Molly.
Okay, do you want me to share it? Is it easier?
Yeah, why don't you do it?
Okay, let me see if I can do it here.
There it is.
You seeing the video?
Yeah, I hope people can hear it. I can't hear it at my end.
You hear it now?
Yep, now I hear it. I hear it through the screen, the speaker, through your speaker, the phone. Can folks hear the video? No, people are chiming and they can't hear the video, Molly. Let's try it again with me sharing it. Give it back to me and I'll try it from my end.
Okay, hang on.
Sorry for the technical glitch here, guys. We'll get it right.
Let me stop sharing here. Okay.
All right, let me move this over to this, get this out of the way here. The share my screen thing you blew up. Give me back to the PowerPoint. I'll click on the link.
Well, it's not going to play that way.
All right. If I share the screen, all right. So if I click on the link, then we need to share the screen, right?
It's not going to play that way. If I play it, what do you get? It opens a link on somebody's window. So.
We gotta get through the advertising. Okay. So they can't see this yet, right?
No.
Okay, so I need to share the screen?
Yeah.
So. All right, let me go back to sharing my screen here.
Got it.
Let me get here, I'll share the screen. Oops, okay. No, what am I doing here? Share. So the screen is being shared. Can they see that now?
It's coming.
Can they see that and hear it?
It looks like it's still spooling.
Can they see it and hear it?
Molly? No, picture. They're not getting the picture.
Not getting the picture?
No.
How do I do this then?
Let me try it one more time, because I showed the picture, right? But no sound?
That was what was happening. There was no sound. Do you want to try it again?
Yep.
All right, should I close this?
Yes, please.
All right, should I stop sharing? Sorry about this, folks. We had this worked out.
Everything worked fine in the test, right?
Yep.
Okay, I'm just going to start a new share.
Do I stop sharing this?
Yeah, sorry, I'm starting a new share.
Right.
So.
Okay, so can folks, the question is, can people see this now?
Is that good?
That works. Looks
it
like
works.
That, yes. Yes, getting yeses.
Database decision making involves
okay, great.
Data and using the information to guide a decision about the educational path of a student. This process is a critical component of effective teaching and a crucial element in the successful implementation of response to intervention, or, as it's known in Pennsylvania, response to instruction and intervention. Response to instruction and intervention is a system for school-wide change that enhances education for all students.
Molly, can you turn up the volume a little bit?
Our curriculum and undergo yep. periodic screening to evaluate their risk levels for academic difficulty. These assessments help students and other personnel understand which students need more or less help in areas such as reading, math, or behavior. Closely tied to each assessment is the ability to use results to make informed decisions about the instructional placement of school-aged children.
The teachers now understand and use the data when making critical instructional decisions about children and their students in terms of reading.
This video is a guide to understanding the process and importance of database decision making throughout all stages of an RTII model, specifically in reading. You will learn about the types of data used in making decisions, how and when data are collected, how they are organized and analyzed, and who is involved in the process. Specifically, we will take you through four phases of the database decision-making process: universal screening and pre-meeting preparation, core team meetings, grade-level team meetings, and process outcomes.
Universal screening and pre-meeting preparation. One of the first steps in the implementation of an RTII model involves the screening of all students. This is a vital component of RTII and helps to identify those at risk for reading difficulties. It is important to understand that this initial step involves all students in a building, not just those who are thought to be struggling in an academic skill. Screening measures are brief, easily administered, and designed to determine a student's risk level for academic difficulty. This is typically done 3 times throughout the school year and can involve assessing skills such as fluency in oral reading, phoneme segmentation, and letter naming.
Okay, you ready to go? You can start.
One night is out, settling her pillows and about to fall asleep, she felt so...
Once every child is screened, results must be organized for discussion by school professionals. Some schools use a data management system to keep track of results. These systems allow educators to enter each student's scores into a database and calculate his or her risk level based upon predetermined norms. If a commercially purchased system is not available, the team can create a spreadsheet containing student name, grade, assessment scores, and corresponding risk level. The spreadsheets are first distributed to members of the school's core team.
Core team meetings. The school's core team is made up of a variety of personnel who have valuable input about student data and instruction. For example, the core team may include the principal, reading specialists, literacy coaches, curriculum specialists, and school psychologists. When universal screening is complete, this group meets to examine each child's level of need by comparing individual performance to grade level expectations. The main goal of the core team meeting is to make preliminary decisions about the appropriate tier and intervention placement for every student. A student's tier placement indicates what level of intensity a student should receive, and a student's intervention placement describes what type of support is necessary. These decisions are based on all available data, which include universal screening scores, progress monitoring data, curriculum embedded assessment, and standardized test scores.
At Overlook Elementary School, we are in our 4th year of using the response to intervention model, and we use universal screening data and progress monitoring data. And we also look at PSSA data and unit test score data every 6 weeks.
The core team begins its analysis by looking at the universal screening data for each student. The target or benchmark score for universal screening probes is predetermined for each grade level, along with the cutoff scores for strategic and intensive levels of need. All members of the core team need to have knowledge of these scores.
Oral reading fluency for 4th grade, we're at 68% in the low-risk category, meaning that they reach 105 words per minute. Taking into account that the goal goes to 118 words per minute at the end of the year.
A student who reaches benchmark is designated as a low-risk student and is typically placed in a Tier 1 group where they participate in enrichment activities.
We have 34 that siblings have placed in benchmark. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we shouldn't just take the top 17.
Scores that are below benchmark fall into strategic and intensive levels,
or Tier 2 and Tier 3 levels of support.
I don't know if he's ready for the discipline of benchmark.
Yeah, and for 4.1,
she'll shake up every day. Well, hopefully by the end of the year.
Yeah.
She should really be right where she needs to be.
She's
getting better.
Students in Tier 3 are typically those who score the lowest on universal screening measures and therefore need the most intensive interventions and instructional support. Skill deficits are examined and students are matched to an intervention group that targets identified weaknesses. The CORD team must have knowledge of the intervention programs available in their schools, along with a list of qualified staff members who can deliver instruction effectively. Once the CORD team has reviewed all data and suggested tier intervention placements for all students, the recommendations are shared with classroom teachers. These data are distributed before teachers gather for grade level meetings, so they have time to thoroughly review the grade level team meeting. Grade level teams consist of all members of the CORD team, plus regular and special education teachers at each grade level.
Thank you for everybody for coming to a grade level team meeting, and we have our third grade teachers here, also with our special education motion support teacher, learning support teacher, intern, psychology intern, and also our principal intern, and a visitor and our special ed supervisor. Today we're going to look at your results from our Zillow results. Need to set a third grade goal.
During grade level team meetings, teachers have the opportunity to ask questions about core team recommendations and contribute to the decision-making process by bringing additional data to the discussion. If a teacher disagrees with the recommendation made by the core team, he or she must provide data to support a change in the recommendation. For example, a teacher can provide weekly assessment scores, unit test scores, team test scores, and permanent products to support his or her opinion.
Moving along then, John, 91, strategic also, reaching a rate of progress at 0.29.
Where is John now with
Michael
and Tier 2?
He's at Tier 2. And I guess, what were his unit scores?
81 and 67. And John, weekly, his weeklies are not fantastic. Weekly, he is like 12 out of 13, 7 out of 13, 7 out of 13 on standard 1.1.
Remember, without data, recommendations are only opinions.
But this data
would
support that, yeah.
She's got a lot.
Yeah, she's
doing
really good.
Okay.
When all the data have been considered, the grade level team can come to a consensus on which tier and intervention program each student needs.
Well, how did he made benchmark?
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on it?
He did well, at least in the multiple choice, having scored the writing, and he did well in the multiple choice.
Well, must have won.
Yeah.
Teachers also identify and target any strategies for implementation within core instruction across each grade level in order to improve instruction as a whole and promote progressive movement between the tiers.
Outcomes. Between benchmark assessments, student progress is monitored either weekly or biweekly, depending on the tier placement. The purpose of progress monitoring is to evaluate the effectiveness of a student's instructional program or intervention. Grade level teams convene to examine student progress every 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, the 6 weeks when we review again, we'll just take a look, and if we know, we probably will have had a unit assessment by that.
Again, a data management system helps core and grade level teams analyze the trends in student data by comparing actual rate of improvement to targeted rate of improvement.
Going to benchmark in the fall, benchmark in the spring, that rate of improvement for a typical kid would be 0.94, so comparing it to that, he's actually making some nice improvements.
An increase in student progress may indicate that a less intensive level of support is required for the student to succeed. A high rate of improvement may warrant a change from Tier 3 to Tier 2 or Tier 2 to Tier 1. Lack of student progress, on the other hand, forces the team to consider a change in intervention program tier level.
So should we move this to my strategic group? Try that.
In every case, teams are always using data to make decisions about the most appropriate course of instruction for all students. It is a continual process. Conclusion.
All right. Ready. First word is SOM. Here we go. S-O-M-E, SOM.
Response to instruction and intervention is about providing support to all students, whether it is through interventions targeted at skill deficits or by providing enrichment for those students achieving at benchmark levels. Through the use of data, teams make informed decisions about how students benefit from the use of this model. This is done through targeting areas of need through initial selection of interventions at the meeting, and then potentially changing an intervention based on data outcomes over time. This maximizes the use of interventions that are proving to be effective for students. With data to support tier placements and interventions, individual opinions are minimized while student potential is maximized. We encourage you to attend any data meetings in your surrounding areas and share ideas with others, as we all share a common goal to help our students succeed.
Okay, Molly, I guess I'm back.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed that video. Again, you can. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties, but you can always view that video if you ever want to use it for any other purposes in training. It's available on YouTube. If you just do a search on RTI Lehigh, you'll find that video there on database decision making, as well as some others that we've done that I think are equally valuable. So let me sort of go back through and review the basics of the concepts that were talked about there. And I do see I have some questions that are being typed. And again, like I said, I will try to get to those questions as I move through the end of the webinar. So please know I haven't forgotten your questions. The key concept here that really underlies all of that data team process is the use of data. And the use of data being recognized that it comes from various sources and it can come from various directions. And the use of that data can be very, very valuable. And one of the things that we need to do in using that data is we have to get everyone on the team to recognize what really represents data that can be used. Anecdotal representation by teachers or just opinion by teachers doesn't represent the data we're looking for. We're looking for quantitative kind of data sources. And those quantitative data sources can come from teachers and from the everyday thing that teachers do, and we'll try to get to some of that as we go. Within the teams, within schools, we have these two levels of teams that we talk about. And the concepts are a core team and a grade level team, and they both have some differences, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And you saw that illustrated in the video. Another key concept that we're going to talk about here is following the script. And when you follow the script, the idea is that there is a script to be followed, there is a sequence to the meetings, there is a sequence to what you do, and a script can even provide the prompts of what you say to keep folks focused on the right direction. Likewise, keeping the time limits is very, very important. keeping the time limits is critical. Most of these meetings occur with a time frame that is defined by the schedule. Maybe you have 30 minutes, maybe you have an hour, maybe you have 40 minutes, maybe you have 50 minutes. Whatever it is, you have a time frame from which the meeting has to occur, and you have to get through all the aspects of the meeting within that time frame, and keeping those time limits are critical. In order to do that, people have to have a role in the meeting. People have to know what their roles are, and they have to follow those roles as the meeting unfolds. It's very important that members of the teams recognize that each of them has a role to play, and they stay within that role. There are opportunities to take things outside of that time that you're meeting, but those are going to be placed in areas of discussion that go outside of the framework of the meeting that we're talking about. During the course of these meetings, what's important is to recognize that the meetings begin by looking at outcomes and ideas and interventions that are at the grade level approach and move from grade level outcomes down to individual level decisions. This is probably one of the most difficult things that I have found in the years of working with teams, to get teams to understand. Teachers are interested in the well-being of their individual students. They're interested in how their kids are doing, and they want to get to the concepts of talking about their individual kids and their individual child problems as soon as possible. Unfortunately, in order to get this process to work and to work well, you have to begin by looking at the group level, because if you have a situation in which the entire grade is not accomplishing its objectives, if you have a situation where you have essentially 35 or 40% or 50% of your kids are at benchmark and the other 45 or 50% are not, then you have a larger, much larger problem that affects the entire grade. So it's important to look at grade level outcomes first and then move to individual level decisions once we see how we're doing at the grade level. And that'll become evident as we work through today's webinar and the next 2 weeks. Another really important aspect of the meeting process is that the meeting needs to be focused on instruction. All of us as educators know that many of the kids that we work with have serious competing situations in their lives that make it difficult for them to focus themselves on instruction. Home life issues, illness in families, interruptions in families, other kinds of behavioral and emotional events that are unpredictable do impact how kids perform. However, what we want to keep our focus on at these meetings is on the instructional process, recognizing that if we've got kids who bring to us these kinds of other issues, those issues can be talked about, but not right here at this meeting. We don't want to be distracted from the instructional part of what we're talking about. If we have a student, for example, who suddenly we find has had a sudden loss in their life, their student's performance has turned down instructionally, we certainly are recognizing that that instructional downturn may be related to the child's emotional well-being. If that's the case, we put that student on what we would call a parking lot, or put them aside to be talked at offline to deal with that specific kind of problem, recognizing that we don't want to talk about instructional change when we've got such a serious emotional issue here. On the other hand, we don't want to bog ourselves down at this meeting where we're focused on instruction on the emotional side of the issues. So we end up really recognizing that we have these kinds of issues that occur, but they have to be talked about separately, and we need to focus our meetings on instruction. We also want to avoid distractions during the meetings as much as possible. I try to emphasize the importance of principals, for example, staying in those meetings throughout. Principals get called out for all kinds of things, and sometimes they can't help it. They have to attend to those emergencies right away. But we want as much avoidance of these distractions as possible. We want to make sure we stay focused in on the meetings. Finally, we end our meetings with a purpose and a summary. So our meetings have a beginning point, and they have an end point. And these two points in the meetings represent what is really critical to keep these meetings going and focused in the right way. If you look at the structure of a team meeting, of a general team meeting, here's how we sort of look at it. We can look at it as three steps. Our very first step is to look at the universal screening information that we've collected. And here we're talking about concerns that occur at Tier 1. These are the concerns that are occurring at the core instruction level, and these are concerns that have to be addressed first in order for us to move more effectively to what would be individual kinds of goals and levels. So at the top level of Tier 1 concerns, at the top level of grade level goals and strategies, what we're looking for here are the big ideas that can affect most of the kids that we're working with, the kinds of things that can move an entire class forward, the kinds of things that we can do as a group of teachers collectively that we might be focused in on that would be more effective. For example, if we're talking about young kids learning to read in the early grades, we might decide as a group of teachers that we haven't been attending as effectively to certain elements of teaching phonemes or teaching phonics. And we may decide as a group, here are two strategies that we think as a group we should all be doing more effectively, and we're going to focus on these in every one of our classes, every one of our core instructional areas, to see if that's something that we can then use to push the entire group forward. These are grade-level goals and grade-level strategies, and that's the starting point of what we do in these kind of database decision-making meetings at this broad level. Once we've addressed those levels, then we get down to individual goals, individual strategies for students who we need to give more Tier 2, Tier 3 kinds of levels of concern. These are students for whom we have more data also being collected, the students for whom we do progress monitoring data or data that's collected on a more ongoing, frequent basis. And at this level, now we're talking about those students that need more specific kind of strategies and more intensive kinds of instruction that go beyond the core level and beyond the Tier 1 level of instruction. These are the kinds of concerns that we have at Tier 2 and Tier 3, and they become the second level of discussion after we've talked about our grade level discussions. And finally, of course, we have our students for whom we've been through serious discussions of Tier 3 concerns, Tier 2 concerns, and now we're talking about students that we might consider are non-responders, kids who are not responding at the level that we think would be appropriate and effective to keep them moving forward, and those kids who might be able to be considered for special ed eligibility. This is the sequence we follow in our meetings, and this is the sequence of the broad base of team meeting concerns that we end up using when we move forward in each of these meetings. Let me start by talking about the core team, and you heard that in the video, that there was a separation in participants between a core team and a grade level team. The core team really represents the core group of individuals who are really the data specialists and the intervention specialists that are going to be the ones who make the strongest recommendations to the grade level teams. Typically, on a core team, the principal is almost always included in that particular group. And we also have somebody who we can call the data person or the data maven or the individual who is the data expert. This has got to be someone who absolutely loves working with data, loves the idea of data analysis, and is very skilled at communicating data analysis to others. This is an individual who is very critical to all RTI teams because these are individuals who learn how to take the data and put it into summary forms that are easily understood by teachers, easily understood by others, and potentially even by parents. The data person is a person who has to really love working with the data because they have to be able to work with the data processes however they're set up for the particular school. Typically, a core team will also involve at least some grade level or content area teachers so that the teachers are engaged also as core team members. Now, typically, this may be a particular teacher with expertise in areas that exceed the typical teacher. This may be a lead teacher, or it may be a content expert that's recognized by other teachers as someone who has content expertise that can really lead to good instructional recommendations. Often reading or math specialists, at least some, are included in a core team, again, because we're talking about individuals who are going to make intervention recommendations. Core teams could often include these individuals. They also will involve intervention specialists. And again, that depends on the nature of the school, but if a school has individuals whose job is devoted specifically to intervention, they may indeed be included in the core team as a core team member. Other individuals can also be members of core team as appropriate, and this could be speech and language clinicians, the school psychologist, guidance counselors, and again, the content of a core team, the makeup of a core team will vary from school to school. You know, at a minimum, the principal and the data person are there, and someone representing the teaching or the instructional process are there. That's your minimum core team, but oftentimes you have others. I think you saw in the example of the video, there were three or four members of the core team, and that included, for example, a reading specialist, a principal, a data person. Those were often the members of the core team that you saw in that example. What the core team really does, and the main function of a core team, is to do data analysis, and to do the data analysis by synthesizing all the data that's coming into the team together into a summary way that can be useful for communicating to others. Often the core team also may make initial decisions of tier assignment. Now, I've seen this done two different ways. In some cases, I've seen the core team actually go through each individual student, make recommendations for which students should be kept at tier one or core instruction, which students might be at tier two, and what kind of instructional tier two assignment would be, which students might be at tier three, and that they might make those initial recommendations based on the data analysis they're doing. I've also seen the core team make decisions about instructional recommendations for differentiation of the core level. So, for example, they may say that these particular students are not only above benchmark, but they're significantly above benchmark, and they need differentiation at the high end of the instructional process. They need enhancement of their instructional process or some kind of enrichment. So they might also make recommendations for differentiation within the core instructional level. Again, these are the core team members that have expertise that are content-based and are instructionally based. They also will make some initial decisions about grade-level goal setting. So they might make some recommendations initially that would be communicated to the grade levels about the nature of their instructional goals for the next benchmark period. And I'll get at that in more detail in the next webinar, but we'll cover a little bit of that here today in terms of the broad-based concepts. At the grade level, now this is what you saw in the video. You saw a grade level team as well as a core instructional team. But at the grade level team, here we have the inclusion of all of the teachers from that grade. It's really, really important that teachers be made a significant part of this process. What will happen at the grade level meetings is the grade level meetings, the teachers will examine the recommendations of the core team. Now, if the core team decides to wait for these recommendations to include teachers, that's also a way to do it. It's not always as efficient to do it that way, but if they do that, then that would be where the recommendations would be made. If the core team, however, does the recommendations first, they bring those to the grade level team, the teachers have every right to examine those recommendations and to agree or disagree with those recommendations. If a teacher disagrees with those recommendations, the teacher's obligation is to bring data to support those arguments. So, for example, a team may have looked at their data, and they may have decided that a particular subgroup of students has been doing so well at tiered instruction that they want to move those group of students from tiered instruction to core instruction only and remove them from their supplemental core instruction or tiered instruction. A teacher looking at those data may object and say that from her perspective, she finds that recommendation would be premature, that the students have not really solidified their knowledge base. They really need more tier instruction to keep them going. And the evidence of that would show up in the data brought by that teacher. She can bring results of unit tests, results of weekly tests. She or he may bring formative assessment, kinds of assessments, rubrics that they've collected, data that's been collected by the teacher to support the argument that the student continually needed more instruction. Once those data are put on the table, then the team discusses where what the resolution should be. Should we put the student back into core instruction only? Should we keep the student in Tier 2 instruction for another period of time? Set objective and goals for when would we be satisfied that the student's ready to move out of their tiered instructional remedial instruction and only have need for core instruction? Or do we move them to core instruction and monitor them in core instruction to see how they do? All these would be decisions made with teachers at the grade level team meeting. The real benefit of this is that this gets teachers to truly recognize that they have the obligation to support their concepts and their ideas with data. If they come to the meetings, and at first I've seen this happen often, where teachers early on in this process come to a meeting with an opinion without the data to support it, oftentimes a good answer to those situations is, let's have you return to your classroom and bring those data to the next meeting, and at the next meeting, let's listen to what those data are, but until that time, here's the recommendation of the core team, let's go with that recommendation. That kind of approach really puts teachers into positions of recognizing that they have a lot to say and a lot to bring, and that can be substantiated with the data they have from their everyday instructional process. One of the things that is very important in a grade level team meeting and a core team meeting is one needs to have an instructional menu to work from. This is an example of an instructional menu from one of the schools that I've worked with over the years. And what it lays out is it lays out across the grade levels in a K to 6 school the nature of what's available for instructional purposes for remediation at Tier 2 and Tier 3 at different grade levels. And you'll see that for some grade levels, we've got the ability for a leveled reader's instructional process across through all grades. But for some grades, we don't have a day book. That's only used for extra comprehension in 4 through 6. Or we may use rewards as a particular program the school used, but for grades 5 and 6 only. So again, the nature of this instructional menu has to be in existence before a team really starts working through here. And the nature of this menu will change by the particular school you're working in. Every one of them I've worked in is different. Every one of them looks different, and everyone has a different menu. The key is to have a broad range of instructional strategies that allows teachers doing remediation to work at the nature of the kinds of skill problems that students present. In this example, you've got students who may have more comprehension-oriented problems, students who have more decoding-oriented problems, and students who have more fluency-oriented problems. In this particular example, they were using Treasures as their core curriculum. They used leveled readers, and then they also used a set of leveled readers here at Tier 2 that might be below level or somewhat below the level of the student's functioning. Again, this is the nature of the way in the instructional menu sets up. At Tier 1, what we think about, though, when we're talking about Tier 1, we're talking about the fact that what we want to really be doing here is we want to be accessing critical data on student performance. And we want to analyze that data to look at which students have gaps and what we need to do to close those gaps and what those measurable goals should be. And what we're trying to do at Tier 1 is to identify these research-based strategies that are broad-based, that cut across all our teachers in our grade, that we can be doing collectively as a unit to try to move all of our students forward as a group. The nature of the data that we look at is also important to consider. And here we're talking about the fact that everything that we can do to bring data to the table is relevant. We certainly have group screening of all students. So we may be using a Dibbles or Dibbles Next. We may be using AIMSWeb for some screening. We may be using STAR measures. We may be using NWEA MAP. And you may have something else that you're particularly using as your screening measure. All of those are parts of the critical data we access. But in addition to that, we may have embedded in the curriculum we're using unit tests or weekly assessments. And those kinds of things, unit tests or weekly assessments, those indeed would be valuable data to bring to the table. In that video that you saw, at one point there was a discussion about a student's performance, and they turned to the teacher to ask about how that student had been doing on unit tests. And the teacher indicated that his performance on unit tests was at a high percentage, and that helped to substantiate whether they would move the student to Tier 1 or keep that student in Tier 2. Many other measures can be brought here. Suppose you use a DRA, or you're using levels of DRA, or you're doing other kinds of formative assessment metrics. All of those are brought to the table as part of the data process. One of the things that I always emphasize to teams is that if you are using only one data source in making these critical decisions, you are really not making the best decision possible. Single data sources are never sufficient for making these kinds of decisions. What we really want are multiple data sources. And many times, multiple data sources don't always converge on a conclusion. Sometimes they diverge. And part of our job as educators is to try to uncover and unravel why we're getting divergent outcomes. What data do we have that are telling us the true story, and what data are we telling us not a true story? Or are all our data telling us different stories on this side of the student? Do we have a student whose fluency is really strong but whose comprehension is poor? And that student shows up very well on our oral reading fluency measure, but when we talk to the teacher and the teacher provides unit tests or weekly assessments that involve comprehension, we're not getting very good outcomes. That's a good indicator of data that's not converging, but is converging on a conclusion that we may have a need for instruction that's more comprehension-oriented versus more fluency-oriented. And that's what we want to be able to do. And what's really important is to train teachers on how to handle and look at these kind of data and bring together the data sources in a very effective way. And that comes with time, and it comes with training, professional development, but it does come, and I've seen it work over and over and over again. Let's talk a little bit about the specifics of the scripts that we're going to use for these meetings. And in just a short time, I'm going to actually put up a file to show you of a script that we've used in our state that can be very valuable for how you run these meetings. Before I do that, let me just set the stage for what I'm going to talk about here. So at the beginning of the year, before the meeting actually starts, there are three really important things that have to be done, and these are often done by your core team and by your principal. You have to have the data to set the stage for the meeting, and the data has to be made available to the team. So the data and the summary of data sources are all available and put out in front of their teachers with enough time to digest what those data are about. Second, you have to communicate to your staff the need to really look at those data ahead of time and try to understand what the data are suggesting. That will be helpful if you're using data summaries as a core team in preparing the data for your teachers. And finally, you want to establish the logistics of the meeting, the time, the place, the amount of time the meeting will take place, who's going to be there. All these things occur before the meeting actually happens. Once the meeting starts, the very first thing we do is we're going to be talking about group outcomes and goals. These are the aggregated outcomes at the grade level. This is where we talk about how we expect our grade to do as a group. How is our grade doing overall? The second thing we're going to do in that meeting is we're going to talk about interventions, as I keep saying, that apply across the grade. These are interventions that apply across teachers, across individuals, across all of our kids at the core level that we could be doing and focusing in for core instruction. And finally, we get to the individual decision, what students are going to need more intensive Tier 2 or Tier 3 interventions, and what are the nature of those interventions, and who's going to be assigned to which of those tiers. So that's how we set the meeting up as we go. When we get to later in the year, we have a very similar script, and that script in the middle of the year, we set the stage by presenting our data to the teachers ahead of time. We communicate to our staff. We establish logistics. But at this point in the year, we look at outcomes. We start by asking whether we've met our aggregated group goals. Have we met our grade level goals? Then we go to interventions that applied across the grade, and if those interventions were effective, and if not, we're going to try to change those interventions. And finally, we get to individual outcomes. The key here in these meetings is that we always start at the broader level of a grade, of the grade level outcomes, and we move to individuals. There is such a tendency and such a desire to quickly move to the individual decisions that we really end up with trying to avoid that at all costs. We really try to focus in on the grade level kinds of decisions. So let's take a look at the script for now, and let me walk you through a script and what it looks like. Molly's going to put the script up here so everybody can see it. Okay. A little smaller, Molly, so I can see the whole. There we go. Perfect. So this is a script that we've used, and if you take a look at the furry first column, we talk about the fact the team is using district-provided data sets, and the data are provided with the data to be analyzed, and the data that are in question are all the things we're using to help make our decisions. The team begins the meeting by identifying the current performance of the grade level, and that is the facilitator actually says, let's analyze how our students are doing on the benchmark skill. So here we take a look at actually how the students have done on our fall benchmark. What percentage of our students are at benchmark? What percentage of our students are at are below benchmark? What percentage of our students are way above benchmark? And what happens here is the team actually begins to set a goal and says, so what goals are we going to aim for by our next review point, which in this point would be the middle of the year, for example. And those goals are actually recorded on another form that I'm going to show you shortly that you can use called the SURF. This is a form that was developed by my colleague Joe Kowaleski here in Pennsylvania. It's very widely used. It's a very easy form to use. You could make it into electronic forms, so you could just type in the data. But it provides a framework for recording all these kinds of data. And we actually set measurable goals by saying things like, by, say, January of this year, X percent of our students will attain the benchmark of whatever that number would be or above. This is for foresight. This is a different measure. On this measure, the percentage of students that are scoring advanced or proficient currently are X, and by January, this percentage we're going to set will achieve scores of proficient or above. I'm going to talk a little more next time about the specifics on the mechanics of actually how you set those numbers at a goal level, at a grade level, goal level, and with a very systematic way of doing it that has an empirical basis to it that I think you'll find interesting. But for now, just get the idea that what we're doing is we're setting these goals for our very next meeting. Go to the next page, Molly. The next thing we do is we say, let's list some effective strategies that are going to assist us in meeting that goal. So what we're looking for here are strategies that are research-based ideas that are suggested by team members or suggested by teachers, suggested by core team members, that represent broad goals, broad strategies that are going to affect everyone in the class, in that grade at the same time. These are things that we're going to do at core level. They may mean we're going to spend more time focused on vocabulary building, and we're going to do that by doing very specific things related to our word wall. We're going to pick out two words in our words of the week, and we're going to use consistently the same words in our grades. So all our kids are going to use those words, and we're going to use those in these contexts of instruction when we're teaching our curriculum this week for the next 4 weeks. That's the kind of strategies we're talking about. The strategies that we should talk about here should be practical. They should be simple. They should be easily done, not complicated, but they should be based on evidence. They should be evidence-based, research-based strategies. we might then throw out a couple of the strategies, and then as a team we might say, well, which of these have a research base, which of these are most practical, which of these do we have the materials to do, what do we need to make, and then to essentially decide which strategies are going to be the ones we're going to choose to do as a group. And we're going to write those down on the SURF. We're going to put them down onto this other, this document that, that demonstrates, indeed, we're going to implement these strategies. We talk about what are some of the logistics of getting those to happen. What, how can we make them happen? What are some of the ways we can do them? What if we have difficulty doing them? How can we learn them? These are some more strategies that can be put forward. Those are the to-dos that we have on our SURF. Next page, Molly. Once we've done that, now we go to looking at which students are identified for Tier 2, and this is when we get into the details of which students do we have to watch this quarter, this next quarter, which students are far behind. Do we have any idea what their slope has been since the last assessment? If it's the beginning of the fall, we wouldn't have those data, but we might have them from the previous years. We might want to talk about which students are going to need the Tier 2 support, and we record those students' names on this document called the SURF. We set measurable goals for each of those students, what those goals should be. We record those goals. We ask very specifically next what kind of interventions are going to be used within the tiered instructional process for those students, how will it be implemented, when, what are the logistics of those implementations, and then finally go to the next page, Molly. We can do the same thing for Tier 3, if that's relevant for students at Tier 3. Go to the next page. And then finally, we end our meeting by recognizing what our next steps are going to be, and we're going to monitor fidelity of intervention between our meetings. We're going to monitor their progress, and we're going to fine-tune strategies as they go. So that's the basic process of how a meeting actually looks, and that's sort of a script that you can follow for those meetings. Molly, would you put the SURF form up here? This is the SURF form that I was referring to. You can make it larger so we can see it. Here you go. And I think it's a very simple form. It's again created by Joe Kovaleski and his colleagues, and has been used quite a bit here in our state. And it starts out by identifying what the target skill is. It's the percentage of students that were proficient at the benchmark at benchmark levels. What is the goal for the next quarter? Go to the next page. And again, I'll talk more about how we set those goals, the strategy selected for implementation, the logistics of the strategies. These are the to-dos. When we get to Tier 2 and 3, we can put our instructional groupings together here for different kids, which kids go into which groupings, which kids might need further assessment, which kids are going to need monitoring, and what are our goals for the next quarter for those instructional groupings. So as you can see, go to the next page here. This is, again, just lays out that information that I was just referring to in a form that I think you would find very valuable and potentially useful for monitoring the process. Keep going down. For those students that are doing progress monitoring, there's also a place to put the measure, person responsible, and the frequency of that monitoring process. So again, simple form, not complicated, can be very useful for keeping track of things in meetings and allowing us to progress from one meeting to the next in an efficient way. Molly, take me back to the PowerPoint that I have control over. Thanks. So as an example, here we have before the meeting in the fall, the data are prepared for the meeting in a teacher-friendly way. The data are sent to teachers in advance. Principal makes sure to know who the facilitator of the meeting is. There's a scribe assigned to the meeting, and the logistics of the meeting are put together. Teachers are given the chance to see all their data beforehand, and they are provided with the written prompts to think about before the meeting. This is really important. Teachers need to know what to look for at the in the data and what they're going to be asked for in that process. like I said, I'm going to be talking, I've talked mostly about these first two steps. What you're going to see in the next couple weeks, we're going to talk about how to set measurable goals for the goal, for the group, how to identify instructional strategies, and talk about the individual kinds of data decisions about rate of improvement for specific students who are being progress monitored. The data can look like many things. This is a data spreadsheet. It may be a little hard to read, but these are data collected by what would have been probably a first grade, or this looks like a first grade, early first grade kind of classroom using the Dibbles. These are the kind of data that are provided to teachers ahead of time. Notice the color in green, yellow, and red. Those are really important. They help to stand out kids that are at benchmark, kids that are at some level of risk, kids that are high risk we should be more concerned about. The kind of data, the kind of questions that we ask right away is, what are the percentage of students that have attained the skill? What are the percentage of students that are developing, and what percentage of students are still very deficient? These represent, again, the first set of questions we ask about our kids at our meetings. At the meetings, the prompt is given. So someone actually says those things. What percentage of our students are at benchmark? What percentage of our students are at some risk? What percentage of our students are at high risk? That prompt, even though it sounds silly, is so important because, again, it keeps things focused and keeps things going as the meeting progresses. Once we have that information, now we analyze how our students are doing, and we record that kind of information. So when we look at our data, we look at data that looks like this. I think most of you probably are looking at data like this when you look at your data. It's some kind of, this is data from a nonsense word fluency data collection in the fall. It provides a percentage of students that are at low risk, a percentage at some risk, a percentage that are at risk. And this is the data we look at, and we answer those kind of simple questions. We then look at, in the wintertime, we do the same kinds of things, but what we look at is we look at the change. So what percentage of our students have moved from, in this measure, from the beginning of the year to the middle of the year? And that tells us something about how successful our strategies were. What we also do is when we also look at our data here, we begin to say our objective is we've got 24% of our students at some risk and 10% at risk. What can we be doing as a group? What are the group strategies across our grade in the area of phonics, this is nonsense word fluency, that we may be able to be doing that could help push all of our students in that positive direction? And that becomes part of the key conversations during that meeting. That becomes part of what we talk about instructional strategies. We also set measurable goals. So we look at those data. We look at our data, and we look at our data, and we say, what would be a measurable goal we can set? What percentage of our students can we move from benchmark, from some risk to benchmark by the middle of the year? And that's what I'm going to be talking about extensively next week, in how that actually gets done in an empirical way. There are empirical ways that we can decide what that percentage should be, and not just guessing or taking a wild guess at what we think we can accomplish, but doing it in an empirical way based on what we've learned about how much movement can we get from one point of the year to the next point of the year in student performance. When we do that at the middle of the year, we evaluate how we've done. So in this case, it looked like our strategies worked very, very well. We went from a situation where in the beginning of the year, we had something like, 14 to 15 students here that were at risk. We had about 5 students that were at high risk, and we moved that to the situation where now suddenly most of our students, as you can see, really moved into the low-risk category, and that's exactly what we want to try to accomplish by the time we get to the middle of the year. So over time, the team looks at their data. Have we met our goals? If the answer is yes, if the data looks like this, we can say, let's stay the course. Let's keep on doing what we're doing. We're doing very well, and the kind of strategies we've come up with have done very well. If not, we need to go look at what do we need to do differently. Do we need to do something different in teaching? Are our materials good? Have we have we done what we said we're going to do with high fidelity? Where's the evidence that we've had good fidelity of implementation? Have we given our strategies enough time? Maybe the problem is we have good strategies and we're teaching them well, we're doing them in good ways, but we're not doing them for enough time. Maybe that's the variable we need to do, increase the amount of time that we do that instructional strategy. This is what the team does at that middle year. They evaluate whether strategies are effective and how they've been working. Finally, what we do is we look at who goes to Tier 2, who goes to Tier 1, who goes to Tier 3. Students who are lagging very far behind by the end of that first quarter, by the end of that first period of examination, may need to be decided that they need more intensive instruction. They move to a Tier 2 kind of intervention. Interestingly, one of the points that's been talked about recently in the literature is when we look at our students in the fall, should we immediately move students to Tier 2 or Tier 3, depending on their scores, on their performance? I have always been an advocate to not hold back the movement of students to tiered instruction that matches their need. In some RTI models, the process starts with everyone does Tier 1. We do our benchmark assessment in the fall. We do an intervention for all, and then around the middle of the first quarter, we look at our students and we decide who needs to move to Tier 2 and who needs to move to Tier 3. I think, unfortunately, that leaves some students who needed that kind of level of instructional remediation early on to not get it in the first 8 or 10 weeks of school. So my recommendation has always been to the teams that I've worked with that you immediately should be moving to Tier 2 or Tier 3 for those kids that need it. However, if your core instructional program has not sufficiently brought the level of students to where you've got a high percentage of your students, or at least most of your students, already at benchmark, we're talking somewhere between 60-65% of your kids at benchmark, moving that many kids into remediation may not be feasible. And if that's the case, you need to devote much more time to the Tier 1 core instructional process to try to move as many kids to benchmark as you can before you are involved in Tier 2 and Tier 3 instruction. But when you have kids who show up in your benchmark really in high need of remediation early on, my recommendation has always been to start that remediation as soon as you can with those kids and not wait until the middle of the quarter. Recently, there's been some research that's been published in the literature, particularly Stephanie Alateva and some of her colleagues at Southern Methodist University have published work that really suggests that it may be important to move kids to Tier 2 or Tier 3 instruction sooner rather than later, and it may not be a good idea to wait for kids. And that confirms what I've at least been recommending over the years that I've been doing this kind of process in the schools I've worked with. So before I end the first day, I'm going to go to some of the questions, and then I'll summarize again what I talked about today. And then recognizing that next week we're going to be getting into some more concrete detail on empirically how we set these kinds of goals for groups and the procedure for determining those goals and how we manage to monitor the change over time. One of the questions that I had asked has to do with the idea of using data to make RTI decisions, but is it realistic? And that it gets difficult when classroom teachers give anecdotal information about their students. I think that's a really, really important question that was asked. And I think it brings to the point the fact that teacher voice in the database decision-making process is an absolute critical component of good RTI process. If the teacher's voice is not brought to the table, then you have a good chance of rejection of the strong data that you've collected. You know, I've actually seen this happen where we've had situations where teachers have brought to the table their ideas that are more anecdotal. I've been a teacher for 20 years. I know what good reading looks like in my classroom. This is a kid who's not showing good comprehension. They're not understanding the processes. They're not getting the basic comprehension strategies. They're not showing responsiveness, and they really need more intensive remediation. And the team then turns back and says, but here are the data on that student. The data show the student was at or just near the benchmark level of performance, that the student was at levels that are consistent with other students like him in the classroom. And so therefore, I don't understand why you think the student's not being successful. And the teacher then says, I don't care what your data say, I know how my kids are in my classroom. When that happens, that's a big problem. What, the way we need to address that is we need to teach and help our teachers to have a way to bring to the table quantitative data, data that they collect on an everyday basis that represents that anecdotal opinion. Their opinions are not based on nothing. They're based on hard facts and data that they collect. What we need them to do is to bring that data to the table, create a rubric, help the teacher create a rubric that allows them to gauge on these different skills where does the student fall, to bring test scores from tests they've given, to bring assignments to the table, permanent products the student has produced, all the things that are data. And that, again, is what we need to do to bring teacher voice to the table. So I am a great advocate for teacher voice. I think it needs to be brought to the table, but it needs to be brought in a quantitative kind of way. Another question here has to do with contextual factors that affect academics. Perhaps counseling should come first. I think this is an important point, and it's a point that I alluded to earlier in the webinar. When a student is known to us to have emotional and behavioral issues that are impacting their academic performance, we can't ignore those factors. The key here is the time and the place to talk about those factors may not be at this kind of meeting that's so focused on the academic data of the student. The time and place to talk about that may be off-site. It may be with the counselors, or maybe in other ways. What we have to also do, however, is recognize that that student who may be suffering academically because of their emotional issue is still suffering academically. And they still need support academically, even if they're struggling emotionally at that time. So one doesn't want to completely ignore the academic performance of those students and sort of wait for counseling to take its effect before we do anything academically. But we have to recognize that the student may need a level of support that undergirds that academic level, and that we may not see the kind of substantial gains we would like to see until some of the emotional support takes hold and until the emotionality of the problem diminishes. But I think it's a good question to recognize there always are contextual factors that impact those kinds of the academic performance of students. Finally, someone asked if there's a similar video for teams discussing behavioral needs such as PBIS. I am sure there are, and I'll be happy to try to track them down. The ones we developed have not been for the behavioral side of RTI, but more for the academic side, and those are the ones you'll find that are Lehigh related. I'd be happy to answer any other questions if anyone has any. And I don't see any other questions currently emerging. If that's the case, I'm going to wrap up. I will wrap this up very quickly. Again, this was a broad-based webinar on the general process of database decision-making teams. We will move into much more details on the goal-setting process for setting goals at the grade level, how you monitor those, and the procedures for determining these goals at the next webinar, which will be next Monday, starting at 4 p.m. At that, I will turn this back over to Molly and say thank you very much, and look forward to hopefully seeing many of you, hearing many of you next week, or many of you hearing me. You're not seeing me, you're seeing my picture.